Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button? You do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're gonna need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to the Storm Lost Rewatch Podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I had to eat mashed fruit, what type of mashed fruit am I eating? I'm eating kiwis, mashed kiwis, no skins though.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and if I'm eating mashed fruit, I am of course eating mashed mangoes that Kate Austin has picked fresh from a tree using her incredibly strong arms. And seatbelt bag.
And I'm Neil Miller. And if I'm laying there dying in a hatch in a jungle of mystery, better be mashing me up some pineapple, bud. Because pineapple's dope.
Pineapple's my favorite fruit, but I was like, I don't really want it mashed. Like the
I was trying to think of like texture. Yeah. But like pineapple does have like a good, like sort of stringy texture.
It's fibrous. Fibrous.
Yeah, fibrous.
Yeah, and you want.
I don't. I like fibrous over like mush.
Like slimy. Yeah. Like a mango would.
Yeah, I can't do too mushy.
Yeah, a mango would mush up real good. I'm glad that none of us picked papaya because papaya is disgusting. it's Fair a lost podcast.
it's a Lost podcast. We are up to season 2, episode 9, What Kate Did on our Lost rewatch. If this is your first time joining us, we split the podcast into two sections. One we call The Calm and will only involve discussion of Lost up through season 2, episode 9. We will not talk about the future seasons of Lost that go through season 6. That's for the second part, The Storm. If you look down at your podcast device, let's call it, or your open window of your podcasting computer. Yes, a whole dedicated computer for podcasting, because you can't use it for anything else. That would cause another incident. You can look at the time codes that will tell you when the calm and when the storm happens, so you don't get needlessly spoiled. Just one negative.
So that you aren't needlessly unspoiled about Lost.
Yes. Sure.
Guys, are we missing like some spliced audio that we need to like put back in? Anyway.
Yeah, somebody's going to find it in a Bible somewhere.
Okay, good. Let me start at the beginning.
If you'd like to support us, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers and join at multiple levels that give you access to our Slack or bonus episodes or posts, or you could watch movies with us or send us mailbags. Episode questions, all those fun things at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. As I reset myself for another 108 minutes, I'm going to pass it off to Joanna to see if we have any reviews this week.
Oh, hey, pals. We do have a review. Thanks so much for asking. This review is very nice, and it comes from, oh, man, I had it all queued up, and then I closed the program. Dang it, I was ready, I promise. Anyway, I'll stall while I get it back up. Which is to say, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Storm Podcast. What a great way to reach us. If you want to email us, you can email us at host@stormpodcast.com. If you want to know what's up with us, you can go to stormpodcast.com. Did I get all of them? And those are all good ways to reach us, and we like to hear from you. But we really, really like it when you rate and review us on iTunes. It helps get our podcast up in front of new eyes. So thank you so much to ZimZack26, who wrote this review. 5 stars. If you ever if you ever watched even a single episode of Lost. Each of the hosts clearly has an expansive knowledge of Lost, and every quote-unquote storm section, they bring that knowledge to frame what happened in the episode they are focusing on. But what makes this podcast special is the way they integrate their own experiences and the general ideas of 2020 with a show that aired over 10 years ago. Lost is a special show. If you've ever felt a strong emotion about Lost, positive or negative, this podcast will give you an even greater appreciation for this wonderful show. So thank you, SimZach26. And thank you, like, because I think, you know, the whole reason to do this now is to bring, like, the 2020 idea of what works in terms of story or character depiction or that sort of thing to Lost. And I think that's where some, like, diehard fans get a little salty because they think we're being a little overly harsh. But I don't know what other reason we would have to do this if not to try to think about the way in which story and character has progressed, and also the way in which Lost helped establish so many rules of how we tell stories now, and also just appreciate all the ways in which it was groundbreaking at the time. So thank you for getting what we're doing here. And if you guys want to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Thanks so much. This episode of the Storm Podcast is brought to you by Shudder. AMC Network's Shudder is a premium streaming video service super serving members with the best selection in genre entertainment, covering horror, thrillers, and the supernatural. Shudder's expanding library of film, TV series, and original is available on most streaming devices in the US, Canada, the UK, Ireland, and Germany. Their new exclusive series, The Deadlands, premieres on January 23rd and features a slain Maori warrior, Wakanuku Rao, who sent back to the world of the living to redeem his sins. But the world Waka returns to is ravaged by a breach between that of the living and that of the dead, as the spirits of the newly deceased now stalk the land and hunt its inhabitants. Follow Waka and his companion, Mihi, as they work to close the rift and restore balance. The series presents elements of action, adventure, and the supernatural, and was produced with a special focus on the heritage of the indigenous Maori tribe of New Zealand. Catch new episodes streaming every Thursday.
I don't know if you guys have used Shudder, but I've been a Shudder user for several months now. It is essentially the Netflix for horror. It has a whole bunch of movies that you want to see. You only have to pay $5.99 per month or $56.99 per year. You could get it on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Xbox One, Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, your Roku, your Android devices. It has a very simple interface, and it is curated, which is maybe the best part about it. It's not something where people are just dumping their leftover horror movies onto a service. They're shifted into categories where you can easily browse for your favorite zombies, J-horror series. Oh yeah, they have like original series, like the new Creepshow TV series, which is amazing and produced by Greg Nicotero of The Walking Dead.
Get started streaming the best horror, thriller, and supernatural content. Shudder's expertly curated collection includes titles like the acclaimed Tigers Are Not Afraid, One Cut of the Dead, Revenge, and the acclaimed Creepshow TV series produced by the aforementioned Greg Nicotero, and the all-new series, The Deadlands, premiering January 23rd. To try Shudder free for 30 days, go to Shudder.com and use promo code THESTORM. That is SHUDDER.com, promo code THESTORM, and get Shudder for 30 days for free.
Neil, remind us what happened on the island this week.
Well, Dave, in this episode, what Kate did, season 2, episode 9. It was directed by Paul Edwards. It was written by Stephen Maeda and Craig Wright. It aired on November 30th, 2005. It takes place on day 49 on the island. We finally moved past day 48. In flashbacks, Kate rides a motorcycle, blows up a house, commits insurance fraud, and has a disagreement with her mom. After then being sold out by her mom to the police, she goes on the run and meets the U.S. Marshal. She also learns some important information about her father's, plural.
Hmm.
On the island, Kate sees a horse. While Saeed and the camp hold a very sad funeral for Shannon, deliriously sick Sawyer attacks Kate, sending her spiraling, emotionally, mentally, just all kinds of things. Her spiral includes making out with Jack. Inside the hatch, Jin finally gets his handcuff removed. Then Michael and Mr. Echo begin their hatch orientation. As it turns out, Echo brought his own Dharma film, which is fun. Sawyer wakes up just in time to take Kate's confession, but be confused about being in a bunk bed, and also see the big-ass horse standing in the jungle. It all ends with Locke and Echo watching a newly spliced version of the orientation film that tells them that under no circumstances should they use the computer to attempt to communicate with the outside world, all while Michael is in the other room using it to communicate with the outside world and talk to Walt. fun fact about this episode. This marks the first episode of the series in which Jin and Locke exchange any dialogue, which I did not... I guess I wasn't keeping track of them, but that tracks. They haven't really had a lot of time together.
I guess that explains why the cuff hasn't come off before, because like Locke's like...
Because Locke does seem like the most likely person to be able to take that off.
I mean, I know they didn't have like the tools before the hatch, like pre-hatch or whatever, but like still, Locke would have been like, buddy, let me paste you up.
Right, let me goop you.
Find some rock.
A little bit of head goop.
Yeah, a little head goop will like take you out of it, and then I'll bash your wrist with some rocks. It'll be fine. It'll be great.
Sure.
Let me build this trebuchet, and using some leverage from the trebuchet, I will get this cuff off.
We're going to crush your entire forearm. This week's opening column question, the real name of the horse that plays Kate's Patronus here in this episode is, and this is, I'm pretty sure this is accurate, Flying W Farms Princess Black Pearl. But here's the more important question. If we had to give this horse like an island name, like an in-universe name, what is this horse's name? Let's start with Dave this week. Dave, what would you name Kate's horse?
I wish there was like a single word that was something like hope for escape, but outside of that, let's just go with escape. Escape the black horse.
Joanna.
Wayne. Right?
Wayne.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I feel like you could just name the horse Dad. And then it's a Patronus for like 15 characters.
Sure. Sure.
Everybody's got daddy issues. This horse is your dad now.
And there's just one real black horse running around the island having like semi-religious encounters with everybody it meets.
Yeah. I know we're hard on Charlie. But I have to say this. One of my least favorite things that happens on Lost is when people who have seen crazy things, like, try to make someone feel crazy for what they've seen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, a good thing that happens in this episode is Kate's like, do you believe in ghosts? And Saeed's like, I saw Walt. It's really weird. I'm like, good. That's great. Meanwhile, Charlie's like, I don't know, Kate. I've seen monsters and I've seen... boars, but a horse,
that's, a horse is a little too far there,
that's
Kate.
Bananas. A smoke monster, sure, but a horse, no. So yeah, Charlie continues to be like, the show has no idea what to do with Charlie. Zero idea. Yeah. Right now what to do with Charlie. So
but, or Hurley, but you kind of don't mind with Hurley.
Yeah.
Because Hurley's nice with his inquisitive nature about Jack chopping wood and isn't, you know, nagging anybody by...
Yeah, he thumbs up...
While secretly hiding drugs.
He thumbs up in the Quans fucking, like, you know, he's having a good time. Hurley, my only note about Hurley was, like, why isn't there more Hurley? But it's not, like, that...
I think it's because...
badly, you know?
Hurley's always showing up to give people truth. Mm. And too much Hurley is too much truth for this group.
I still think we could use more Hurley.
Oh, sure.
We do. Yeah. We should pause for a thumbs up the Quan's fucking, because finally someone
gets it on the island.
Yeah. I mean, I think Shannon and Saeed beat them to it a little bit, but not by much.
Listen, Jin came back like 10 times hotter from the raft adventure.
Daniel Day Kim's like, I'm going to do all the ab exercises in the off season.
Daniel Day Kim did the Kumail Nanjiani workout in between seasons 1 and 2. Like, when he comes out of that tent, it's like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, because you are already like, that is an extremely handsome man. And then when he comes out of the tent, you're like, I am personally offended that we haven't gotten this view already. But remember how, like, Jin, season 1, Jin is like, son, button up that thing on your cardigan. And now he's like, oh, hey, camp. Yeah, these are all my
season
abs.
2, Jin is like, this is my handcuff only look.
Yeah, exactly. No, I for one, am extremely grateful that Jin's time in the water has made him fully lax about shirt usage. So thank you, show, for this bit of ice.
Yeah. And if we were picking
traumatic
the two
experience at sea.
If we were picking the two married characters that have been reunited that we were going to see a shirtless couple of, it was between this and Bernard, and I think we had a good choice.
How dare you?
Poor Bernard.
No, I'm super psyched that Bernard and Rose are getting it on somewhere in a tent. It's just, if you're going to do the huge shirtless display, let Daniel Day Kim show off his work.
Sure.
But I think it's nice that, you know, I think it's slightly more realistic with all these attractive people on the island in season two that, you know, we've had two hookups in 9 episodes. We went the whole first season without any hookups. Seems really of note, but we don't have to dwell on it much more than that.
Well, I don't know that we've talked about it in the calm section. But there is a song from Garfunkel and Oates called Why Isn't There More Fucky on This Island? It is a very spoilery song because I think it was written in like the final season of Lost. Don't listen to it if you don't want to be spoiled. But the premise is like, why isn't everyone boning all the time on this island? They're very attractive and sand is soft. So, you know, it's a good question.
But
one of the eternal unanswered questions of Lost
that will forever remain unanswered.
The only one.
Everything else we have definitive answers for. This week we finally learned what Kate did, in the official podcast for last week's episode. David Lindelof and Carlton Cuse said that this episode was inspired by people asking what Kate did. This being a rewatch podcast, I didn't forget what Kate did, but I think I had forgotten what it was like living in a world not knowing what Kate did, because I had forgotten the drama with the multiple fathers. So the beginning felt, much grosser and less mysterious than I'm sure it felt to everybody else. Because at that point, I guess he thinks he's hitting on his stepdaughter. Oh, no, wait, what does Wayne know?
Wayne definitely knows. Wayne
know? Isn't that the question?
What did Wayne know and when did he know it? I think he definitely knows that Kate's his daughter. Like, if Kate can do the math on when Sam Austin was deployed elsewhere, Wayne may not be smart, but I think he can do that math as well.
Fair. And you think that's what he's like? Do you think he used that to Kate's mom to like get back in the relationship? Or do you think Kate's mom really is just fully in love with Wayne?
She's in love with this guy who sucks. And he's hitting on his daughter. And I've seen Bastard Out of Carolina. These things happen sometimes. So, you know, I think he's fully hitting on his daughter. And I think she knows he knows. And that's why she is so disgusted. And she's just like, yep, this is what we're going to do. I mean, I actually love how this all knits together because, I think they gave themselves a great amount of leeway in terms of like, Kate is already on the run when she hooks up with her childhood sweetheart and like accidentally causes his death. So she's already done something. We know her mother is extremely mad and distrustful of her, et cetera. And I think this puzzle piece, and we know that her dad, her Sam Austin, Stone Cold Sam Austin, raised her to like hunt and trek and stuff like that. So he's a nice guy. So like the fact that they, fit this little puzzle piece in all those parameters, I really like it. I think it's tidy. So.
Well, yeah, it's the second thing that Kate did because the whole mystery at first was around, I mean, it's the second thing. I love that there's just like levels to all the bad shit that's happened to Kate, where it's like we originally find out, you know, the emotional gut punch of her having accidentally killed her childhood boyfriend or childhood love. And then this one just, it's kind of amazing how much they fit into one episode, like how many sort of like, you know, Lost's version of a double cross. There's like 6 of them in this episode. And I think that it's really impressive.
Yeah, no, I think it really works. And I love this for Kate for a couple of reasons. One, because it feels like righteous-ish, right? I mean, I'm not like for vigilante murder or whatever.
I'm not saying like, you know, murder your father. I'm just
right,
saying,
but she's like, he's you know, abused her mom. He's like creepily hit on her, like all this sort of stuff. And then it ties into this larger question of like, are we born bad? Are we born with sin? Are we born inherently evil? And that's like what Kate's grappling with when like Wayne, I don't know, occupies Sawyer or whatever it is, like that she's like this reminder. And it, you know, like this episode, I think some people, especially watching now, are maybe not that interested in the Sawyer, Kate, Jack love triangle. But I think if you want to view it through the lens of like who Kate thinks she deserves or what kind of person she thinks she is, and like, I don't know, your mileage may vary on like who's the virtuous love interest and who's not between Sawyer and Jack. But like on the surface, Jack is like the good guy doctor and Sawyer's like the bad guy con man. And so she's like, am I a bad girl and do I deserve a con man?
Like,
or like, do I get to be with a Jack or do I get to be with a Sawyer? And like,
she's like, Sam Austin told me that I was a trash person with murder in my heart. So I need another trash person with murder in his heart.
That's the thing is like, sorry, Dave, I really don't mean to like, I want you to talk too, obviously, but like, a bunch of our listeners were like talking about this episode in our Patreon Slack, and, they're like, oh, how nice. Sam has, or Kate has an actually like a nice dad in Sam. Like, that's so nice. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he told her she, like, I feel like he's really shitty. Like, he's nice to her, but also very shitty to her in that
scene.
But
he's also like, well, if my heart wasn't poisoned with murder.
If I wasn't born bad like you, you know, and you're like, yikes. Anyway.
Because so, Wayne is your father.
Yeah. It's just you guys in are, you. Just,
you got some Satan blood in you.
It's just in you. It's just in you, Katie. Anyway, Dave, what do you think?
Oh, no. I think it's so well constructed to provide those twists that Neil's talking about. It's like hard to do an episode about a character that we've already seen her of like run from U.S. Marshals and kill somebody. And so you also want to start that episode off literally with a bang, but then to keep it running throughout the parallel story with the island is really sort of a trick that in this episode, the island, I think, gets the short end of the stick in terms of story continuity. Because it's not that the horse on the island isn't cool. It's that Charlie is halfway to being correct when he's listing off the crazy things that could be on the island. And she doesn't tell Jack about the horse, which would be sad because he could have told her about his zombie dad. But like the idea there can be anything on this island, is a trap door that can get you out of certain story situations, and Lost uses those or builds those into their stories, I think, with varying degrees of positive effect. The horse works well as like a symbolism thing, and I kept thinking, obviously, of the other, obviously, for someone like me, obviously, of the other horse in like television history, which is the white horse of Twin Peaks, that shows up whenever something traumatic's going to happen. And I was watching a 4-hour video about Twin Peaks the Return and breaking it down critically, and they were talking about the white horse in response to like the Woodsman's rhyme, don't worry if you haven't seen Twin Peaks, it doesn't make any more sense if you've seen it, about how the horse is like the white of the eye, and what that symbolizes is when you're looking away, more of your eyes white is exposed. And so if that were to happen, then the black horse would be something that's meant to draw your focus specifically so you're not looking at something else. So I don't really know where I fall on symbolism of black horse. It really works in this episode. I'm really interested to see if the island just keeps spitting out crazy animals for us to see.
Yeah.
Too much Twin Peaks?
No, never enough. Never enough, my friend. We're definitely going to talk about more about Kate's horse in the storm. Kate's horse is a really interesting thing. So we will.
For sure.
Yeah.
I do think that they, you know, this is Kate's version of, at least for now, this is Kate's version of the fate versus coincidence. Sort of the conversation that Echo and John are having, like confusing coincidence and fate, is it's Kate's Kate's question of destiny is, am I evil? You know? So, you know, you have John dealing with, were we brought to the island? You know, is there any purpose to us pressing this button? Kate's is a little more existential. It's like, what is my nature?
Right. And that's something we've been talking about a lot in this whole rewatch. It's like, what is my nature, and am I allowed a fresh start? Do any of us get a fresh start on this island? Or, you know, Kate's whole thing of like, or am I just bad because I've got this bad blood in me and I will always be bad? And, you know, and so that's what the choice of Jack and Sawyer represents to her, as she like makes explicit when she's talking to who she thinks is Wayne in the bunk bed or whatever. But I don't know. That to me makes the love triangle more interesting, because Kate's ping ponging can get a little frustrating, right? She like kissed Jack in this episode, and then she's also like snuggling up to Sawyer, and you're sort of like, okay, Kate. But like, if it's between what's comfortable for me or what I want to be or what do I deserve or what am I allowed to have, like that's a more interesting push and pull for a character, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that makes it work.
Good old Kate. All right. Meanwhile, with Kate, Kate sees a horse. Kate feels unworthy because of her parentage. We have a surfacing the ongoing mythology plotline as Echo reveals the Bible was not just a Bible that he found in the Aero Station. It has the outtakes from the orientation film on it. And Locke and Echo are finally together in the weird island mystery, right at the end of this episode. And we learn, not to use the computer, for anything besides entering the numbers. Apparently, according to Locke shows Echo, you actually can't type anything otherwise, except apparently if you need to, I am with your kidnapped son.
What I love about the sequence with Echo and Locke is, and probably almost every sequence where these two characters are together, is just like the amount of like reverence and rapt attention they have for each other. Like when they're speaking, when John Locke and Mr. Echo are having a conversation, for each of them, this is the most important conversation they've ever had. You know? And so there's like this extra gravity to it. So it's actually very funny to me that like them trying to work out all this stuff and like no one's paying attention to what the fuck Michael's doing. You know, like Michael's like, hey, can I check out all this electromagnetism and just sort of look around? And Locke's like, yeah, sure. Mr. Echo and I have to stare into each other's eyes for another hour.
Yeah, and Michael's also like, oh yeah, one film that tells you nothing? I'd rather look at the technology,
right.
But also misses the important part of the film.
Well, do you think it's, So Mr. Echo and Locke, which we already talked about last week, how kind of excited we were for these two characters to meet. This episode just like doubles down on that. Next week is a Mr. Echo episode.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times. Do you feel like the fact that the vibe that I got when the two of them are like sitting at the hatch table was like a Heat vibe? Does that feel, you know, like the diner scene in Heat when you've got De Niro and Pacino together at last on opposite sides of a diner table? It just felt very it's such a monumental scene, and I love that it's in this like weirdly mundane setting of the like cafe table. Mm-hmm. In the hatch.
And I think they're obviously trying to work each other out, like trying to figure out what's going on with the other person. And as an audience, we're at an advantage with Locke because we sort of know what his deal is. Like he is all up in the fate narrative. He is all up in this is our destiny. But we actually don't really know yet what Mr. Echo's belief structure is. We just know that he's like taking it all in. He's picking up books when he can. Like he's strong, silent, and like Locke, we're still sort of trying to figure out, like, is he buying this? Does he care? Like what is his interest in the hatch? Because now this is like the second episode in a row where Mr. Echo has been super interested in what's going on in the hatch. So I think that it puts the audience at sort of a weird imbalance. But you know, we're kind of doing it with Locke, trying to figure out Echo, and I love it.
He is a lot harder to read than Locke, because even when Locke was walking around trying to be friends with everybody, you'd at least happen across him in a scene where he'd be like super friendly, and whether or not how he's presenting at any given time is like the absolute truth, how he's presenting is definitely tailored to whoever he's presenting himself to. I'm thinking like, you know, building cradles for Kate or finding Jack wandering after his dad in the jungle. But then to see Locke go up against somebody that gives him nothing in return, so far has been great. I want a little bit more out of it, but I love little things like he's like so excited. He's deep in his mystery, and Echo just very patiently holds down the tape and watches him like he's, you know, just like a little bit too enthusiastic. So I want more of these two people. And hopefully it gets them out of the hatch a little bit. Maybe not.
You know how, like, you know, Locke would just show up and, like, eat fruit or drink coffee or whatever and be, like, super weird in front of people and, like, kind of, like, spook them out or, like, talk about the game of Go or whatever it is. And he's just like, yeah, I'm here to be, like, unnerving and weird and mystical. And then Mr. Echo's like, so in ancient biblical times, and Locke is like, whoa, dude.
Echo says like two words for like, you know, a week, and then all of a sudden busts out this story about the Old Testament. Just great stuff. Just great. Mr. Echo is, I mean, he, you know, and it's, you know, sort of part of the performance that he gives, AAA gives, as Mr. Echo is, he's just a mysterious canvas that we're constantly trying to figure out what is happening. It's like watching a painting being done like slowly and it doesn't come into focus right away. It's great. It's great.
All right. So I have some trivia about this episode. This goes back to Evangeline Lilly. And I asked my co-host about this before the podcast, and apparently they haven't heard of it. So I don't know for sure if this is the episode, but it sounds like it could be, given Kate's mango collecting slip at the beginning. But she claims that the stunt coordinator would not allow her to put moleskin on her forearms to prevent abrasions. So the first time she did it, she ripped some skin off her forearms.
Ooh.
And the stunt coordinator just put liquid bandage on it. Ooh. And made her do it at least three or four more times. Yeah. And she says she would not do such a thing, not being in her 20s now and being like an actress that has been around and seen the thing. But she's never named specifically what episode or what season of Lost it was from, probably to shield like a stunt coordinator. But in terms of the stunt they describe, where it sounds like she has to slide off a stationary log, and she was connected to it from her hip, so she wouldn't fall all the way, sounds like it could be mango tree climb.
Interesting.
Indeed.
So Evangeline Lilly sacrificed her body for those mangoes.
Oh, I actually...
Which actually, okay, it works. Oh, no, because, like, when she slips, like, that little, whatever that lizard part of my brain goes off and my palms start to get sweaty.
Oh, I've had that kind of fall before. Yeah. Like, I'm not a limber person, as you guys know, but I have climbed a few trees. I've done that fall. It's like the half fall where it feels like you're about to totally fall, but you catch yourself and it still hurts. It's not great.
Terrifying.
Huh. Okay, well, the other information that's in this interview that she gave Deadline in 2018 is that she feels like she was being punished because she insisted on doing the stunt herself. And then she says that she calls the stunt coordinator misogynistic.
Oh, I mean, there was, you know, we talked, I think this would have been in like one of the first couple episodes of the entire show, about how they mention in one of the commentary tracks that she was like a big tree climber, you know, that like Evangeline Lilly was like very good and very into climbing the trees. And yeah, well, sounds like it went wrong.
Yeah.
So fewer and fewer trees climbing, and in fewer and fewer purple shirts as Lost goes on.
This scene, which is nearly identical to the scene in Whatever the Case May Be, except the tone of her purple tank top is slightly more fuchsia. It's like almost exactly the same tank top, except it's actually a different tank top because you look them side by side, or the color correction was different or whatever, but it's slightly more fuchsia. Anyway, this is like the seatbelt bag, the mangoes, the shimmying up the, like, it's almost exactly the same, which is like, isn't that crazy? Because like, obviously that's what, you know, they would all be like doing their things over and over again. Like Jin fishes a bunch of times. It's just funny because she's like wearing the same thing. And I know that they wear the same thing on the island over and over again.
Everyone's really into their chores. Like Sun was like, my husband's alive somewhere on the island,
but the laundry
needs to get done. The chore wheel is actually walking up from the tailies.
But the laundry needs to get done.
Yeah, but this laundry
my husband's
is-
like right over there.
These button downs are not going to beat themselves against a rock, so I got some stuff to do. It's fine. This is fine. Should we talk about Shinnen's funeral?
Let's. That would be the title. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant the piece of music, but you mean the event.
I mean the event.
Yes. But well, we might as well. It's taken us long enough to get here. Shannon, is laid to rest in a ceremony that is very nice, except it neglects to mention her brother who died mere days before.
I feel like everybody knows.
We already did the boonerole. Like, did the boonerole, guys.
The boonerole's still super fresh.
Remember when Locke showed up, like, covered in blood to the boonerole? I just once again, and I know that some of our listeners disagree, but I have such a hard time with like Saeed being like, I love her. Like, I'm like, okay, I guess. I'm not that Shannen isn't worthy of it. It's just like, it's been only 49 days and the two of them have only been like flirting or whatever for like 20 days or whatever. And I know that like intense circumstances create intense bonds. And Sawyer says,
you've seen Speed.
Sawyer says a similar thing about Kate in his delirium, but he's delirious. I don't know. It's just like, the problem is, other than Saeed, there was no one like connected to Shannen. And so her funeral just like isn't very emotional to me. And it's just like it's a little bow on this character that they couldn't make work. And then they just are like, let's move on. I felt more emotional about Boone's death, the Boonerole than I did about Shannen's funeral. And it's not because I like her character less. It's just like, it seems like they're in such a hurry to just
be done on with the Rutherfords or the whatever.
Yeah.
The Carlisle Rutherford squad.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. And it does feel like the loss of, on a meta level, the loss of Shannen as a character is partially a consequence of having to lose Boone. Because you're right, like, that's a really good point, because once Boone is gone, Shannon's entire storyline, all of her previous storylines revolved either around Boone or Saeed. So there's really not a whole lot for Shannen to do at that point once Boone is gone.
I know.
Unless you find some other creative way to use Shannen, which they obviously weren't interested in doing, I guess.
Right.
But
and it's not like Shannen and Kate had a relationship. They didn't really, but it's still like, it bumps me out that Kate's like, yeah, I'm not gonna go to the funeral. You go ahead. That's fine.
I'm gonna stay here with my the ghost of my father that's living inside Sawyer's delirious body.
I got some Patsy Cline to listen to. P.S. Right. Fun fact, and I don't remember if we've mentioned already, but there's almost always or every time in a Kate episode, there's a Patsy Cline song. So if you hear the Patsy Cline playing, it's a Kate episode. It's a fun little quirk of Lost. It's the Shannen funeral, you know, Jack does some leadership stuff. I do like the moment actually that works better for me than the funeral is like Sun and Jin, like post-coital snuggling, and then Sun looks over and says, he's just like fucking digging a grave, and you're like,
oh, right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It feels like a scene that needed to happen because obviously Jan was a main character, but it also feels like kind of half-baked.
Yeah.
Like, knowing, no, can't say that in the call. Never mind. More characters could have been there. I feel like everybody on the beach should have been there. Move a little bit of the Ana Lucia conflict up. She's way too isolated in this episode, considering she just got smushed back in. There could have been some other moves.
That being said, so go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, it almost just feels like they had too much to do. Now that the Tailies are integrated with the main camp and the whole, you know, the resolution of Shannon's death is that they didn't do anything to Ana Lucia. You know, like they're allowing Ana Lucia into the camp. So that's the ultimate resolution of the Shannon situation. So it's like, I don't know. It's almost like it feels weird to say this about a main character, but like her funeral is sort of a weird afterthought because the only person that is like super broken up about it is Saeed, but we just spent a whole episode last week dealing with Saeed's emotions.
I honestly almost think that like if we had seen him, we'd seen him digging the grave and then see him. I mean, you need the funeral because you need everyone out of the hatch so that Kate can never freak out and like all that sort of stuff. So you do need the excuse of the funeral. But like storytelling wise, I think it would have been more effective if like you see Saeed digging the grave and then later you have that conversation between Saeed and Kate at the gravesite, which I think is a good scene. And I think Evangeline Lilly is really good in it. And Naveed Andrews is good too. But yeah, the funeral itself just, yeah, it feels like too much and not enough at the same time. Half baked or whatever you want to call it. So
yeah, it could have just been a musical thing, maybe.
Right. Could have been a montage. Really.
Montage.
Could have buried Shannon with a montage.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that moment is also the moment of our Giacchino corner this week as Shannon's funeral continues the lackluster titles.
Michael
of
Giacchino's
two.
Clever name vacation continues.
Is there any other plot line that we're missing? I think that's it, right?
No, I think we got it. So, I want to talk a little more about the stuff in the storm.
Yeah, yeah. So I will say the first time I rewatched this episode, when like Kate helps Sawyer out and they're in the jungle mystery, and I was like, oh my god, why does Sawyer's hair look so bad? and then Kate's like, P.S. your hair looks very bad. And I'm like, oh, okay, good. It's intentional.
It's on purpose.
He also, I mean, he just got done being dragged through the jungle and then laying in bed for like a whole day. You know,
well, he pulled a bullet out of his shoulder, floated to the beach, got thrown in a pit, dragged through the jungle. He's been through a lot.
Sure. He's having a rough week.
Which is good because now I miss his sass. So like bring it back.
And Sawyer, I like that it comes back immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Sawyer was really button heads with Ana Lucia. I'm much rather see him butting heads with Jack and Kate.
I do know what I want to say. I like Jack bringing the tequila. We can have a question about why there's any tequila left. Perhaps it's part of the medicinal store and somehow
has to be.
Jack has like kept it guarded, but like I gotta tell you guys right now, if I'm on Flight Oceanic A15. 49 days into our time on the island, there is no tequila left on that island. I have drunk it all. But I like Jack doing the like peacemaker leader. I'm gonna try to keep easy. You know, it's similar to like when he went over to talk to Rose at the beginning. Like this is something that Jack does, and I like this for him. And I like this moment for them. So
well, and it's also the benefit of the show very early on. In season one, sort of just tying a lot of people to Jack. It makes sense that they had that scene at the end of season one where he meets Ana Lucia now. So like to have her tied to Jack allows Jack to constantly be in that role of like the guy who's trying to bring everybody in and keep everyone together, you know, live together, die alone, that sort of thing. It was good. It's good planning in that way. I mean, we talked last week about all the ways in which Ana Lucia's, the plan for Ana Lucia may not have been great, but that actually might be one good way.
I feel like the missing piece is the piece where Jack comes out of the jungle and says to everybody, there was an accident, Shannon's dead. like, I feel like that's the missing piece, because otherwise we have, like, I know what happened to Shannon, and that's why the scene with Jack and Ana Lucia on the beach, like, makes sense, but it does make her feel isolated, because we don't know, we, like, she's saying she's going to be an outsider, it seems like it's okay, the funeral, there's not, like, any sort of mention about, like, Shannon being murdered, so it seems like we're over it. I'm just wondering exactly when that happened, because I felt like I should have seen it, maybe?
Yeah, like, what was Rugby Shirt Girl's take?
Exactly.
On Ana Lucia?
Anyway, Neil, what were our three competing Jungle of Mystery moments?
Oh, we had all kinds of Jungle of Mystery moments in this. Well, I guess the horse is its own mystery.
Like I said, we're going to talk about the horse more in the storm, but
right.
Let's just make sure we all have the same facts out here in the calm. Kate touched that horse, so it is corporeal.
Right. Yeah.
And Sawyer
sees the horse, so it's not in Kate's head.
Or it's like a, you know, a shared
that sure
can be touched. That's all. I just wanted to make sure that we
okay. Yeah. The second one is the existence of the additional film in the Bible. That's a good one. You'll remember that was picked up at the Aero station, which is where they also found a glass eye. And then electronic, digital, Walt
chat. Where's the other computer that he's chatting from? Is he just on his cell phone from the future? Is he 2019?
Maybe it's
texting?
Because he's covered in water. It's conductive.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows him to interact with electricity.
And then Michael talks to Walt. The amount of question mark you put into that line reading was just so good. I'll never get over it. I was like with bated breath waiting to hear how much question mark you put in. And you were like, Walt? So good.
Yeah. It's one of the great questions of Lost. It's like, what the fuck is going on there?
Well,
Jungle of Mystery moment.
Dad?
Our Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award is Sawyer falling out of bed. We don't see it, but he is definitely there and the alarm's going off.
Yeah, he definitely needs to be picked up later.
Yeah.
So.
Also, Kate didn't press the button. That just occurred to me. Well, yeah. Anyway, that's, not the most responsible decision making.
Also,
that's okay, Kate.
Well, she thought her island boyfriend was haunted by the guy, her dead dad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You just got to be careful. You know, the greater good versus hauntings.
Well, I gotta say, if Sawyer had started like spouting some Christian shepherdisms, I feel like Jack would have also hightailed it out of the hatch. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
Ghost dads are powerful.
The only one who wanted Sawyer to wake up and start, you know, like speaking in tongues or something was John Locke. Like, he was ready. He's like, just in case. I do have one more thing that I'd like to point out as a Jungle of Mystery moment, which is the existence of blast doors. I mean, I know it's not like a huge mystery because we've seen in the orientation film that there was some kind of incident, but, you know, just don't forget. Michael notices structural things.
Yeah, I do like that whole, like, Michael's like, hey.
He used to be in construction.
Remember what I know? I mean, not computers, but I'll tinker around there anyway. But I do know blast doors. So.
And he really wants to check out all the electromagnetism.
Everything I've invented on this island has turned out great. Water distribution, raft. Why not some sort of blast door propping mechanism?
The raft worked. Just because
yes.
They weren't ready for bearded strangers doesn't mean the raft itself didn't work.
It's true.
You know? Well, as far as we know, Michael built two functioning rafts in the in the time when everyone else just managed to hang some tarps. And that's the extent of their structural. Well, and John Locke and Boone built a trebuchet. So, you know.
But the trebuchet didn't really work. So
true. True, true, true.
It worked as a trebuchet. Anyway,
are you guys ready?
Unimportant
are you guys
debate.
Ready for Accent Corner?
Yes.
Ooh, there's an Accent Corner.
This week on Accent Corner, we are obviously not going down under because, like, this did not take place down under. But we did go to the South. This is the American South. So even though Evangeline Lilly is from Canada, she's supposed to be a Southern girl. Corn-fed Southern girl. So let's go
Yeah, wait,
through.
Where does she... Do they say where she's from?
She's going to tell
like
Harry.
Where does Wayne live?
Where does her mom work at the diner?
Yeah.
Iowa. I knew it. God damn it. I should have just said it. I like looked it up, but I was also like, well, you don't describe someone as corn-fed if they're not from Iowa, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Kate's out there caucusing for explosions.
All right. So Kate's from Iowa. So let's start with the most recognizable parent to everyone. This is Beth Broderick, who plays Diane Jansen, her mom, who calls Kate Catherine, which I love. And a lot of people know Beth Broderick from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, where she played Aunt Zelda. Beth Broderick, Southern or not Southern, guys?
I don't think so. She's not Southern in anything else I've ever seen her.
I'm going to go also no, not Southern.
Beth Broderick was born in Falmouth, Kentucky.
Well, I guess that. No. Here's the thing. Is Kentucky the South?
What the heck? Is Kentucky not the South?
I mean, it's kind of in the Midwest. I don't know. Someone from Kentucky is probably going to light up my mentions for this.
If you asked me to name Southern states, Kentucky would be like the fifth one that I would name, basically.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. All right. I mean, growing up in Ohio and having Kentucky be like the first state just directly south of our extremely Midwestern state that borders Canada, to me, it was always a little weird.
I mean, what's funny is like Iowa's like up yonder. So the fact
right,
that Iowa's Southern
like
accents
the plains
are coming out of Iowa is interesting. But anyway. All right. So this Beth Broderick. Let us go to James Horan, who plays Bad Wayne. Is James Horan, who plays Wayne Jansen, is he Southern or not Southern?
I'm going to say not Southern.
I'm going to go with Southern.
James Horan, who plays Wayne, is from Louisville, Kentucky. He is
God damn it.
Southern.
All right. By those rules.
All right. So Kentucky.
And our last one is Lindsay Ginter, I think is how you pronounce his last name, who plays Stone Cold Sam Austin, Kate's father, who tells her that she has murder in her heart.
Really dark father moment. I mean, if we had to rate, like, rank dark father moments, like shitty things dads have said to their kids on this show, that's like way up there.
It's above anything. I think it's even above Christian Shepherd being like, you just don't have it in you. Right? You didn't say you've got murder in your heart.
To 10-year-old Jack. This one's tough because Lindsay as a man's first name is a very Southern thing.
Like Lindsey Graham, for sure. Does it
but
help
I don't,
to
he doesn't
tell you
feel
that he's a Lindsay Lee Ginter?
Oh, Lindsay my God.
Lee. Or L.L. Ginter, as he sometimes goes by.
Oh.
I'm going to say, yes, he's Southern, and more so, he's from Kentucky.
Because we've got two Kentucky so far. Right.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think the actors, as much as his name would indicate, there's just something about that actor where he just seems not Southern at all.
Lindsay Ginter is from Alameda, California, so right down the road from me. So that's
Dave, not Southern at all.
That's Dave 0-3, and Neil is 2-3. So thank you guys for playing. And yeah, so that's Accent Corner this week. Thank you all.
Nailed it.
Accent Corner. Not good at this game. All right. The Leslie Arts Memorial Ironic Statement Award this week goes to the Marshall, who says, "Don't run, Kate." Like, she can do anything else.
She's born to run.
Kate wouldn't run.
That's right.
She's going to run, and she's going to collect mangoes, and you can't stop her from doing either.
And she's going to get her arms out when she wants to. That's what Kate does. What Kate did, she ran. That's what she did.
She ran.
Also, shout out to the immediate payoff of Sawyer being mildly convinced that they've been rescued, and then immediately being like, son of a bitch. It's anytime they can get Sawyer into a position where he has to exasperatedly say son of a bitch, it's great.
Of course we've been rescued. Why would there be an exercise bike on the island?
Follow-up question. Is U.S. Marshal Edward Mars really bad at his job? How many times does Kate escape him? Like, many times, right?
Yeah. I mean,
this one feels like Watch the Road, like real simple.
It does feel like, though, it's like who is Kate to Edward Mars? Like, does he think she's like Hannibal Lecter or something? Like, this has gone on too long.
Richard Kimball, right?
Right, exactly. It's like his white whale was catching this woman who blew up her own house.
I would love to see Edward Mars go, "I don't care." That's my Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he might have until, you know, she beat the crap out of him in his car. And now he's the marshal that now is in the graveyard next to Shannon.
Now he cares. All right.
In our official podcast check-in, there wasn't a lot of stuff that wasn't teasing next week in the entry of the official Lost podcast that aired with What Kate Did. But they do answer some questions from watchers, and one of them had this, and I thought we might as well address it here. It's Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse talking, and Damon Lindelof, reading the question, says, "Why did you waste 4 weeks of trying to open the hatch in the first season, and Boone dies in the process, and we come to find out that there's a back door like 20 feet away that really isn't hidden, and if you say that door can only be opened from the inside too, then I would say it would have been easier to open that door than the actual hatch." End quote. Carlton Cuse says, "You know what? You're right. Totally." And David Lindelof says, "Busted." Carlton Cuse says, "We're completely busted." And Dave Lindelof says, "Busted again." So that's the official word. There are two entrances to the hatch. One we spent a long time opening, but yes, there's just a door you could usher a very hurt Sawyer out of without causing any sort of injury.
Well, I have a question, though. Do we know that door, my assumption, having watched the show several times, was that door isn't, like, right there. It's, like, at the other end of the hatch. Like, it's not, they weren't, like, right next to each other.
No, because, like, there's
doors on each end, yeah.
Yeah, remember all the mirrors that, you know, we're in the hallway.
Right.
The podcast continues, and Damon Lindelof says, "Well, if you think about it, the back door is in the rock face and completely obscure anyway from where the other hatch is." And Carlton Cuse says, "More obscure than a hatch that's buried in the ground with a bunch of dirt on it." And Damon Lindelof says, "I guess we are busted."
I mean, I think they are.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, like, the ladder was broken. Like, you know, Kate got hatch snatched.
Yeah,
like,
I guess
if Rose wants to do laundry, you got to come in the other door. I have a question. So John Locke is explaining how they handle the button to Michael. And he's like, two-man shifts. Everyone's on rotation. And I'm like, oh, really? Everyone or just
everyone except Rose?
Or just your clique? Because I don't think Rugby Shirt Girl ever gets to just kick it in the hatch and, like, eat some cereal. As far as I can tell, it's only like six people. It's like what? We see Hurley, Kate, Jack, Locke. Who else is on button duty?
Echo's been there. Echo? Michael's been there. Michael. Well, I mean, I don't know about button duty. But also, you think there'd be like a lottery for the other bunk bed?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Like, they have two beds.
Cute.
Anyway, I can't trust John Locke with the chore wheel.
Does Sawyer count as one of the people? Because there's a lot of just one person and Sawyer in this episode in the hatch. That's what I want to know.
I have been convinced that, oh yeah, that's true. Well, that's because there was the funeral going on. I have been convinced, oh yeah, and then Sun is like watching him and she's like, "Do you mind? I want to go fuck my husband some more."
Actually, there's a deleted scene of like Sawyer laying there shivering and like in the top of the bunk bed, it's Sun and Jin banging it out.
Someone finally convinced me that it would be a bad idea to have Claire and the baby in there is she named the baby at this point? Yes, Aaron. To have Claire and Aaron in there because of the loud noises that go off every 108 minutes.
Every 108 minutes, so yeah, baby is awake.
You can tell why people aren't in there for leisure.
I don't know.
That alarm sucks.
I would be like, that's fine. I was like, you know what, John Locke?
Oh, you got a couch? Cool.
You got a couch. You got records. You got books.
There's a bike.
Cereal. I will be on every shift. Thank you very much. So, yeah.
And apparently some leftover crossword puzzles. All right. This week before the storm, Joanna, we have something special going on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we've got Once and Future guest Joe Garfine is here to talk about her nonprofit, Cancer Gets Lost. They got some really special stuff going on right now. This is the time to learn more about it. We talk all about it. And just so you know, there's a few like tiny little spoilers in this conversation, but we give you some warning and you can skip ahead. But like, please do listen to what Joe has to say about this really, really worthy endeavor and how you can help you Lost super fans can benefit yourselves by helping this nonprofit. So as promised, our friend Joe is back here to talk about Cancer Gets Lost, the nonprofit organization that she runs and their big 2020 auction. So Joe, what can you tell all of our Lost fans and listeners about what you've got going on this year?
Well, in a spoiler-free way, because I'm not sure what section is still appearing on your podcast, I will just say that for new and existing Lost fans, the 2020 Cancer Gets Lost online charity auction will be open for fans around the world, and it features items such as a pilot script signed by Mr. J.J. Abrams and Mr. Damon Lindelof, but we also have smaller items that are starting at $5, like trading cards signed by Rosen Bernard. So we try and have a little bit of everything. It's going to be open online from February 8th to 15th next month. Why? Because of 8/15. I mean, hello, Oceanic. We like to have fun with our dates for our auctions, and it will be online, as I said. And well, for the 2020 Cancer Gets Lost online charity auction, we've actually selected the Leukemia Lymphoma Society to receive the net benefits of our auction, which means to say that every cent raised in this charity auction will be donated to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society after we pay our vendors, so about 100% of the every cent raised. And we chose this because of my dad, and we're lucky. My dad had a very rare blood cancer, and he is currently cancer-free thanks to a clinical trial. And we know that so many people out there are still battling various blood diseases, and that is why we chose the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. We always choose a different cancer charity to receive the proceeds from our auctions because we like to spread the love around. And so basically, long story short, everything you can find is on cancergetslost.org. We are opening registration soon. You can pre-register. All you need is a PayPal account. It's open to fans around the world. And we have items starting at $5, and we have big ticket items like a piece of the temple. Michael Giacchino said, I have a piece of the temple from season 5, and he shipped it to me, and it's in a giant box, and that is going to be up for bid. So every cent helps and matters, and we appreciate, we know there are so many causes out there that are worthy of your time and your energy and your money, and we appreciate anyone who considers donating via Cancer Gets Lost to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And as a huge Lost nerd, it's such an honor to be able to do this in the year of the 10-year anniversary of the series finale, which is why we're doing it in 2020.
I love it. Thank you so much for telling me about that. Let's go ahead. Okay, I'm just going to say a quick spoiler alert. If you like don't want to hear character names you haven't met yet or something like that, you can go ahead and skip forward. But Joe, why don't you like let the spoiler gates, floodgates like open and tell us some of the other goodies that you might have on offer for folks.
Okay, so spoiler alert, yes. In season 3, people might have noticed that Ben Linus wore an iconic green linen shirt throughout the whole season. Michael Emerson donated his screen-used green Calvin Klein men's large linen shirt, and it's so cute because the costume department wrote Ben on his tag. So it says Ben on the Calvin Klein tag, and it's screen-used, it's wrinkled, but it's gorgeous because it was worn by Michael Emerson. We also have one of his leather-bound journals that he used in the other camp. So items like that that are kind of spoilery, but not really. We have the Blu-ray set. If let's say you're watching it on a streaming, which is great, but you want to have your own copy. Nice. We have a Blu-ray set signed by 17. We're talking Damon and Carlton and 15 actors. We took the lid of the set around the world for the last 3 years to different conventions and got it signed. So it's items like this that are sort of one of a kind, but I think would appeal to all Lost fans. We also had some custom art commissioned. I got a custom art called The End, which is a drawing of for the last scene of Lost. And we haven't revealed that yet, but we'll show it very soon. Again, spoiler alert, sorry.
I can't wait to see that. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay.
And also items like we have a Dharma jacket and a Dharma instructor t-shirt and dress that were used in 2008 Comic-Con booth that ABC put up. So we have some obscure items that People who used to work on Lost have donated. And, you know, again, though, we have small items. We have magazines and trading cards that are signed so that people have an opportunity to give back, even if they don't have a lot.
Excellent. Can you tell us one more time where folks can find all of the information and all of these goodies?
Yes, thank you. Cancergetslost.org, and Twitter is @CancerGetsLost. And again, thank you so much for allowing me to talk about it on your Lost podcast, which is huge because we are a party of two and this is our press right here. This is us doing it while we're building the option.
Excellent. Well, I really encourage all of our listeners to go do this. It's a great cause and some great stuff. And thank you, Joe, for just being a great ambassador for this show, for funneling your fandom into something so positive and so good. You love to see it. And thanks for letting us all know about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. As I like to say, we have to give back.
Now is the time on the podcast where we like to thank our small council Patreon subscribers. Yes, that is a holdover from the Game of Thrones days. These are our folks who contribute at the $10 level or above. This last month, they got to watch the movie Cool Runnings with us, which was actually
Cool Runnings.
Feel the rhythm.
A fantastic movie. I cried. It was a really, really fun movie club.
That's John Candy, Canadian National Treasure.
Yes, one of many perks that comes with being part of our small council subscriber, including having your name read out in this podcast. So if you want to subscribe, you can go to patreon.com/stormspoilers. And here we go. We want to thank Melanie. Oh, Chu, maybe, is your last name, Melanie? Please let us know if we got that wrong. Dane Mayer, B. Max, Kate Thram, L.M., Dean, Laura Anderson, Jeff Ruberg, Laura Atiu, Benjamin Jacoby, Reginator Cakes, Gustavo Villarreal, DJ Empirical, Phil Jackie, Meme Lord, Jessica Lair, this is one of my favorite Patreon folks. They're all my favorites, but I messed up his name. Sverir Sigfridsson, Manu Mishra, Megan McLeod, David Koplos, and Eve Fontelay. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank Lily Lim, Derek Dock, Vince Lewis, Russell Griffin, Philip Durrett, Melanie Rodriguez, Sarah Carmichael, Spencer Howard, Huang Lee, Michael Sample, Jenna Mandel, Chris Ernst, Rosa Peretta, Ashish Sridharan, Kayla Sargent, Annie AK, Stephanie Breitbach, Becky McMorrow, Matt Campbell, and Bronwyn Beck. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following folks: Aaron, Jillian Q. Johnson Arnold, Jeremy M. Johnson, Joe Torrens Fernandez, Paul, Asiya Glover, Kelly Eidson, Tay, Kelsey Almager. Ooh, I think I might have got it. Jennifer Barrett, Lily Evans, Patrick Wayne, Hayden Simpson, Grace Vassington, Ben Brown, Rebecca Glover, Liz Wilson, C.S., Paul Cole, and Maya Finkelstein. Thank you all very much.
And we're back for the storm. A lot to talk about this week. We've got horses, we've got ghost possessions, we've got Electra Walt, and Locke being back to maybe being good or bad news. I want to ask about Ghost Sawyer first. What do you think happened here?
Sawyer's possession.
Do we think Wayne's in the Sawyer?
Wayne's in the computer. Wayne's in the Sawyer. Yeah.
This one's tough because you want to believe that it's something that's all in Kate's head because it's Kate like dealing with her own trauma, but Sawyer does fall out of bed, which makes this one a little different. Like, it's not the same as her seeing the horse. Well, I guess, you know, by the end it is. But it's really interesting that they choose to, I don't know, make Sawyer's delirious sickness part of Kate's thing. Like, what are they trying to say by making those two things connected? The fact that it's not just in Kate's head, the fact that Sawyer is like physically participating.
Right. So if you take everything that's happening to Kate as like a trial of Kate, then the way that I could make myself feel better about it is because of Sawyer's weakness, he's able to become like a conduit. Like, and to whisper at people, they have to be like, you know, worried or in distress or whatever, for the voices of the dead to like reach you, but to be like, to take control of someone, maybe that person has to be like at death's door. Yeah.
So it's the island speaking through Sawyer, I guess, or more to put a point on it, since we're in the storm, is it the man in black speaking through Sawyer? Because I think there's an inference that the horse is part of the man in black, by eventually the horse is part of the man in black's thing, right?
Okay. So
yeah, this is where I get confused.
We've talked about this before and it's really confusing, which is that on a March 21st episode, 2008 episode of the podcast, Damon and Carlton answered a fan question about the status of various appearances on the island with regard to whether they were real or apparitions, incarnations of the monster, or merely the figment of Hurley's imagination, which is Dave. At one point, the two claim that they have three boards in their offices that that list the current status of various characters as either alive, dead, or undead. Allegedly, the undead board only contains three names: Christian Shepherd, Yemi, and Kate's horse.
I mean,
take that, man in black horse.
That's so
equestrian
weird.
In black.
Because the horse shows up elsewhere. The horse is the reason why the marshal crashes his car, for instance.
Well, that's horse.
But it's also a black horse.
No, but it's the same horse. But the question is, like, is Kate's horse being on the island the same as Christian Shepherd being on the island? Christian Shepherd being on the island. What's curious about Christian Shepherd, and I'm sure our listeners will be able to clear this up for me, but like, when the man in black poses as John Locke, John Locke's body doesn't leave the coffin because they find it later and they're like, holy shit, if that's John Locke, who's that? You know, sort of thing, right? But when Jack goes to look for his dad's body is not in the coffin.
Right.
So I feel like, and didn't we already determine that sometimes Christian Shepherd isn't the man in black? Sometimes he's actually Christian Shepherd on the island.
Right? Maybe. Does anyone else ever see Christian Shepherd other than Jack?
Yes.
Locke does, right?
Okay.
And Claire does too.
Because that's really the selling point on the horse, is that Sawyer sees it at the end too. He's like, that's what makes, because otherwise you could really write the horse off as being like in Kate's mind, but they really sort of, that's a choice. That's a really intense choice to make Sawyer see it at the end, because now the horse is, you know, corporeal.
This was the thing I was like trying to allude to in the column without going too overboard, where it's like, this episode works so well, but it does so at the expense of, we're just never going to explain the horse. Which they didn't, to be fair, there's a ton of stuff they're tossing up right now in the second season that they don't know if they're going to explain or not. I'm sure they intend to explain all of it, but in like the large stretch of the entire run of Lost, it's like, this episode works so well, but because they just made up the horse.
I have questions about the horse. That's where we're at. You know?
Well, yeah.
Like, this is a great episode. But what's going on with that horse?
And like, it works well as like, you know, this weird, it works, and the horse in Twin Peaks works because it's a weird surrealist TV show. But like, Lost is in this weird second season where the details absolutely matter. And we have a vision horse, which is creepy.
I think the answer we've gotten from our listeners who are like, who know the series so much better than we do, is that sometimes Christian Shepherd is the man in black and sometimes he's not. Because the man in black confirms on the show that he sometimes used the Christian Shepherd like apparition thing. Like when he's, right, when he's like luring Locke and he's like, say hi to my son or whatever, like that's Christian that's the man in black, right? But like, there are other instances of Christian Shepherd, like him like waking, him telling Vincent he has to wake his son, or like, you know, so I think the answer for some of these characters is like, sometimes. I think the same is true of Yemi. I think that's why they're on this like in between board. 'Cause like, I think is Yemi always the man in black? I don't know. And then with Kate's horse, I just think they don't know. I think that's what that third board is for, is they're like, I don't know, we thought it'd be cool to have the horse there. And then we were like, all right, we don't know why that horse is there. I think that's the truth. Kate's horse,
I mean,
is,
but
like,
it also implies that there's a horse body somewhere on the island. I want to see that flashback.
If that's the man in black, but if it's just like, if it's like Dave, who is just a figment of Hurley's imagination, but then Sawyer sees it too. But was that boar that Sawyer saw intentionally like trying to haunt him? Like, what's, I don't know. I feel like there's something, and this is right around the time, because this is sort of like, I don't, is Yemi in? Yemi doesn't appear till season 3, right? On island? Next week is
that's
the Mr.
Echo
episode, but I think Yemi appears in the second Mr. Yemi appears on island in the second Mr. Echo episode. And so I think that's season 3. So like, I don't know. I just think right around this time they were kind of like black lodging it, where they're like, I don't know where it's,
yeah, it does,
you know,
it does feel like the supernatural things that happen on the island, or like the people who show up on the island who aren't supposed to be there, I guess would be the easiest way to describe them. The show fits them into two categories, right? We'll see if I understand this correctly. It's either the man in black doing his thing where he's testing them and trying to figure out which ones are good or whatever, bad or whatever. But then there's also this, like the way they explain where the voices come from is like there are souls attached to the island, like ghosts essentially, that can manifest in different ways. So I guess the horse kind of fits into the latter, where it's just like the horse is like the island. The island, I don't know, because it, the man in black does this thing where he tests people, but then this horse also feels sort of like it's doing that thing where it shows up at Kate's lowest moment and messes with her, kind of like it, you know, the man in black is known to do with other characters. You know, it the island is speaking through Sawyer, and then the horse is showing up. It's really hard, you know, this is a really hard one for them to write themselves out of.
And what do you do on island?
Yeah, like what's it going to be here, island? Is this part of the plan, or is this just random shit from like the souls that are just chilling on the island?
It's interesting in the rewatch how, because Jacob ends up being so passive in season 6, how we're always like on the lookout for the test being like a man in black test. Is there any evidence that there, well, like, Jacob just tunes the fuck out when the Losties show up, right? Because Ben's basically running the show.
As far as we know. I don't really understand the Ben Jacob handoff, even though I've rewatched the series a couple times at this point. So like I don't know why Jacob would do that. Tune out. Because that's what, you know, God does sometimes, right?
Well, right. But also, like, the horse, the reason I'm asking is the horse isn't completely negative. When the horse shows up and Sawyer sees it, that's actually saving Kate at the moment. So it doesn't read completely like a man in black test. When it first shows up, absolutely, because it gets her in the headspace to hear, you know, possessed wind coming out of Sawyer. But the end one almost seems like comforting, like comfort horse. That's why I was trying to name the horse Escape, because it helped her escape the marshal, and it would like help her escape her own little like downward spiral. I thought it was a positive horse, which means if it's a man in black horse, I'm very confused. But maybe this is just one of those cases in Lost where we're just going to be very confused.
I mean, the Christian Shepherd stuff is like eternally confusing when you try to nail it down, and so Kate's horse, Yemi, and Christian Shepherd all being on the same board really feels like a what the fuck to me, because like Christian Shepherd appears on the freighter to Michael, but like allegedly like the smoke monster can't leave the island. So who's that Christian Shepherd? Or then you have the Christian Shepherd who appears off island to Jack, and you're like, well, that's not the smoke monster because he can't leave the island. But then like the smoke detector goes off and that's how Jack sees that Christian Shepherd. So I'm like, what message of the show, like the smoke detector went off, what are you trying to do to me? So I just feel like they don't have it all nailed down, which is fine. I'm not mad about that. I'm just saying like it makes me less batshit crazy if I try to like, I feel like they had a we don't know board, and that we don't know board has Yemi, the Kate's fucking horse, and Christian Shepherd on it. So, you know, jungle
fair,
jungle,
fair enough
jungle mystery, you know.
So since those are the three things on the We Don't Know board, we'll touch on this before we ramp down. Walt's electromagnetic powers allow him to communicate through his mind into a computer. Right, Joanna?
I want to read this message that our listener Emily just posted in our Slack minutes ago, which is, it's bad for soggy Walt. She posted this in the calm because she's a calm watcher. She says, it's bad for soggy Walt to be in the computer. You're not supposed to get the insides of computers wet. even our
soggy Walt's now electro Walt.
Even our calm listeners are worried about Walt being inside the computer. Anyway, I still think this to me is the introduction of Mikhail to the show Lost. Hello, Mikhail. Nice to see you. I'm glad you're impersonating. See, You know,
I know that this is one of our great arguments about Lost, which is,
is Walt in the computer?
Why does Walt have powers if he's not actually in the computer?
Because he does other things. He's out there murdering birds in Australia.
Uh-huh.
He's doing other things. Yeah. He's not in the computer. Why would he lure his dad
come save him.
It's a trap, though. Michael's walking into a trap when Walt gets... It's not just like, Dad, it's like, come meet me at so-and-so place. And when Michael does that, it's a trap.
That's true.
And they're expecting him. It's definitely Mikhail, is what I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, apparently we get to some sort of creator official podcast later on where they say it's Walt. I'm very interested to hear when we catch up with that, what episode it's connected to. Because if it's here in the second season, then yeah, you're probably right. It's Mikhail. They don't know it yet. But if that's like a third season podcast or fourth season podcast, then Walt could still be in the computer and my argument's still alive. But the important thing, I guess, to discuss as we go forward in the storm is we will touch on it minimally until we hit across that quote, because, Michael has a couple other secret planning things at the computer in the next couple episodes.
Does Michael, he says, like, how does the exchange go? It goes like, who is this?
Mm-hmm.
And then does he say Michael?
He says, I'm Michael.
Yeah, it's Michael. And then Mikhail's like, oh, got you, motherfucker. Because if it had been like, this is Jack, Mikhail would have been like, son, you know?
Oh.
Right? Okay. And then if it,
or if it was
like,
Kate, he'd
been
like,
he'd been
horse?
Like, I know you killed me. why'd you kill me, Kate?
Horse?
Horse.
Neil, remind us where we're going next week on the island.
Well, next week we're going to pick up with the biblical stories and themes. I feel like we're going to get talk about a lot of religion next week, because the episode's called The 23rd Psalm. It is our first Mr. Echo episode. And I will say this is obviously not a spoiler, even though we're in the storm, that the Mr. Echo introduction, like the introduction to his character, a lot better than Ana Lucia.
Yeah,
I think they said they were planning this one out since Boone found the plane. So
sure, because the plane comes into it directly, and the Virgin Mary statues are big.
Yeah, but that might be the longest lead for a character introduction we've seen yet. Because everybody else, like, you know, Ben, as you were saying, kind of improvs his way into there. Until next week, where we learn about drug running and pretending to be a priest, where can we find more of your work online? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Well, you can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. And I do a bunch of other podcasts that you have probably heard me talk about before.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, he gave me over at the filmschoolrejects.com. Get me on Twitter at Rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast, where we got all of our fun announcements.
And I'm David Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E and at the Fighting in the War Room podcast. And here every week, urging you not to fall down.
You killed me.
You killed me. Why'd you kill me?
Horse?